Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horik and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys in the Netherlands.
Welcome to a new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. And today we've got, all the way from New York City in the United States of America, Ali Riaz as CEO of Task Analytics. Good morning, Ali.
Good morning, Mark and Elias. Really nice to be with you.
Good morning, Ali. Nice to have you here. Well, Ali, it's a great pleasure to have you on our podcast. Task Analytics. Let's before we start about Task Analytics, let's talk about you. Can you introduce yourself and tell the listeners who is Ali Riaz?
Oh, thank you. Ali Riaz is a culturally confused human being living in New York. I was born in Pakistan, but when I was very, very young, I moved to Norway with my family. And lived there for most of my life until I went to school in California and lived in Switzerland, London, Boston, and now living in New York. But the whole time, my passion has been around really creating new things, you know, kind of like, why didn't this exist before? Why can't this not exist? So, but mostly in software, but also in life sciences. But it's always been about trying to understand data, make it meaningful. And now we have so much of it that I am very happy.
Yes, I can imagine. Talking about Norway, is that the place where you met the guys from NetLife, from Task Analytics?
That's right. So I'm often in Norway, visiting from New York. I'm involved with several startups and incubators, and I'm always meeting brilliant people trying to solve important problems. And I've seen a lot of digital transformation, and the type of digital transformation I really trust comes from people inside the industry. You know, they know the pain, they want to get to the gain, but they also know the pain. And those people normally are the best ones to solve how things should be better using technology.
Wow. So, Ali, I've actually never had someone on the show that had experience in Norway, which kind of triggers me the question, because you say you're in several startups. What's the startup community like in Norway?
Well, you know, Norway has been a very rich country for many years because of the oil and gas industry. Mm-hmm. And that has afforded Norwegian people to really invest in art and culture and the infrastructure. So it's become a very put together country. But despite over $1 trillion in a sovereign fund, the Norwegian government and people understand that their future cannot be fossil fuel gold. It has to come from other places. Mm-hmm. They have to find other type of gold. And as you know, information and data it's gold already.
Sure. Yes. Indeed. So I hadn't heard about Norway before because we often talk to people here, also in the Netherlands, from people from Scandinavia. But usually when you talk about startups, it's all about Helsinki and the former Nokia people that like have built their startups after Nokia. But I didn't know there was like this community in Norway. But the way you explained it, and I heard the story about all the money a country earned by gas, oil, etc. They didn't spend that. And are they putting funds together for startups or something from that money?
They are. They are putting funds together from that money. They're also putting together funds from other government initiatives, and they're putting money together from investors. You know, America is America, right? When it comes to incubation, acceleration, you know, creating companies, you know, there's thousands of future Bill Gates running around mm-hmm. every street here. So I think sometimes there's a lot of hype, you know, whereas in I don't know about all of the world, but especially Nordic countries, they tend to be very self-critical. You know, not every idea is amazing idea. So I think there's a little bit more skepticism in the beginning, whereas in the US, we are like, you know, everybody wakes up pretty much every morning with a brilliant billion-dollar idea.
Yeah.
Norwegian culture is different, you know, so we are a little bit more, tough on ourselves in terms of validating. Is this
well, maybe less risk averse, or maybe you're just being realistic.
I wanted to say that word, realistic. Realistic.
It's like, I think that's, we have that in Holland as well. You know, it's like, I love the U.S. and I travel to the U.S. a couple of times a year, and I love the way the people are optimistic, etc. But, you know, not every idea is a future Microsoft. So, and I think we in Europe tend to see that or try to get like some proof that this idea really is as good as it is,
right?
And we're not putting all our eggs in that best basket. Where I also think the culture in the US is different from, where basically if you fail, you'll start something new, and you see that as an experience to go on and learn from that and start something new. Whereas I don't know if it's the case in Norway, but in the Netherlands, it's more or less like you have like a stigma that someone that fails will always fail.
Yeah, I mean, somebody like Elon Musk would be considered a very bad executive.
And another thing, what I think is that with coming this technology from Norwegian or from Europe itself, they straight from the beginning understand how our European culture is, and also regarding for privacy laws and how with all the data is being processed. So that's, I can see that there will be more technology coming from Europe in the coming period. And so talking about that, let's make the switch to task analytics.
I just want to say two comments, quick comments the whole Norwegian versus world and realistic. Just very quick. You know, nobody thought Facebook was a good idea. I still don't think it's a good idea, but financially, it's been a very, very, very good idea.
Yeah.
Right.
For us.
And you know, I have to be on Facebook myself because that's how I get my class reunions and pictures of my nieces and nephews. So you know, we're all kind of forced to be on it. If you belong to a soccer club, you wanna, you know, organize a team to meet. So Facebook has become a part of our logistics. You know.
Well, they're digital bandits. Today they were in the UK government. They were announced to be digital bandits, but they put that set apart. You know, okay.
So that's one aspect of it. So you know, sometimes really crazy ideas can be very lucrative if you give it enough oxygen. You know.
Yep.
The other part is that now we are really globalization. You know, forget about what you knew about globalization before, with how people are using technology. So for example, SaaS offerings, right? Software as a service, whether that server is in Ukraine or in Oklahoma or in Oslo, it doesn't matter. You know, you're expecting a SaaS experience as a customer, as a user, wherever you are, you're expecting the same experience. You want to try it before you buy it. So Norwegian company, no matter whatever the culture is, the competition field now is global. You know, 4.5 million, 5 million people in Norway is not a market, does not a market create, right? Yeah. So software companies that only want to satisfy Norwegian market are not going to become very big. But so software companies are now forced to think about the customers globally, right? Because anybody can come to the .com. So that's a really important part that's forcing Norwegian companies to be more aggressive, because American companies are so aggressive. They promise everything to everybody. And European companies are much more, you know, kind of like hold back. So, you know, the more aggressive one normally wins. So it's interesting what's happening. Let's see where this goes and how the cultures have to be melted together with the globalization of our businesses.
Well, the truth is always in the middle.
So, yes. Yes.
Somewhere across Iceland or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what entrepreneurs do there.
Yeah.
And there are many entrepreneurs in Reykjavik also, as you know, right? They're going to really be a highly software focused nation. So we'll see.
So then you step into Task Analytics. Can you explain what Task Analytics is? What
does it do? So, you know, we at Task Analytics, you know, we created the company based upon one core belief. And the core belief is that behind every click or any action on the website is a human being. So traditional analytics tools focus on user action, you know, an action. We focus on user experience. You know, so the real human insight behind what they do on your site. We call it the user's intent. You know, the why is somebody on your website. Mm-hmm. For me personally, when I first met Task Analytics, I've been a meditator, Vipassana meditator for many years. And one of the things you do before you meditate is, you can if you want to, but I do it. You can do an intent. What's your intention of this meditation? So I was immediately attracted to the team behind Task Analytics and why they built it. Because intention to me, you know, if somebody says, hey, you fool, but the intention is kindness and friendly, it's okay. But if they call me, hey, you fool, and the intention is negative, I don't like it. Yeah. So intention is a very important thing, and data and technology and software tend not to understand necessarily what the intention is, right? So the idea of trying to capture, you know, to use a survey-based software in order to provide human insights to clients, you know, which helps them to focus and prioritize the strategic development of their online existence and customer experience. That's really what Task Analytics does. It is designed to complement the customer's current analytics tool. So we don't replace anything, we build on top. So we have integration with a bunch of other stuff like Google Analytics and Hotjar and so on. And then it makes it more actionable and, you know, and we provide data to those KPIs that impact online offering. And, you know, we have mostly, you know, we have obviously direct customers like government entities and, you know, large companies like KPMG and Cisco and so on, but also smaller companies that where they have to understand the efficiency of their website. And also, but we work a lot with agencies, right? Because agencies work, use us to really help their clients understand what's happening on the website, right? What's, who's coming there? What are people trying to look for? So think about it this way: when if you go to McDonald's.com, you know, the hamburger shop, and your desire is to write something negative about them, right? Then maybe you should serve them more information about all the good things McDonald's is doing, right?
Yep.
And if you're going there to find write the earnings report, you know, how did they do this quarter? Then you want to make that financial information more available to them. But the idea is that the more you understand the intention of users, the more you can improve your navigation and messaging so that user experience is good. And you know, user experience, customer experience, we have worked on that for many years. Imagine all the shops and malls, and you go in and they have a door and they have somebody greet you. On a human level, we have done that. Now, so much of business is online. How do you do that online?
Sure.
You
know, that, yeah.
And this is just the beginning. This is just,
I always tend to make that comparison to online. To people that have a website or an e-commerce website, I said, well, if you have a shop offline in a mall and you would have 1,000 people coming in and 991 are leaving or 999 are leaving without doing anything, you wouldn't let that happen, right? You would do something.
Right.
Why don't we do that online? So why do we online say, hey, a conversion percentage of 0.8% is a great percentage? And I can't see that. So would it be fair to say that you're in the conversion optimization and user experience game?
100%. That's 100%. Very well said. I will be using that in my marketing material going forward. Thank you.
Yeah. I would say so because that's a large, broad market, right? Because you know within that there is this whole landscape, MarTech landscape that Scott Brinker put together. There's a conversion corner there in that little, there's probably, there's like a couple of hundred companies already in conversion. So it would be good to see what's the difference between task analytics and companies like Optimizely or Visual Website Optimizer or Hotjar. Could you explain to our listeners what you do different? Because you can talk about top tasks, etc. I've seen the software, but our users or our listeners haven't. What can listeners expect from the software? So what happens once a website owner implements task analytics?
Well, once they implement task analytics, they have opened their eyes for why people are visiting their website. Did they achieve their goal? And if they didn't achieve their goal, what did they do? Now, think about it. If on any website you had this information, you actually would have lights in the dark when you're driving, right? So
right, yeah.
Actually, no. So, you know, so let me explain a little further. So, you know, a click or a general survey only takes you, you know, that so far, right? A click doesn't get frustrated because it can't find what it's looking for, but a person does. They have reason for doing what they're doing, right? They have a job to do. They want to buy something. They want to subscribe to something. They want to order something. They want to file a complaint. They want to find prices. Whatever they do, people go to a website very often.
Yeah.
Of course, there are people sitting and surfing the web nonstop, but you know, they're not necessarily your customers. So a traditional analytics tool tells you what happened or is happening. Again, we tell you why they did it. Our slogan is very often we say, now you know why, right? Now you know why. So we have three key elements that make us who we are different and differentiate us. So we are the human side of digital analytics. We go beyond ones and zeros to provide real human user insight. You design with us, right? We build with us, we enhance with us. There's no more guesswork in when it comes to UX design. In the past, my marketing department comes to me and says, hey, look, we have a new website. Normally it looks very nice. You know, my picture is in there. You know, okay, this looks okay, let's go. And again, as you said, you know, thousands of people come to the website. A lot of people don't convert. Why? I don't know. I don't know which part is working, which part is not working. You know, having this lights in the dark, lights in the fog lights on, you know, basically you're not just enhancing, you're designing and you're building. So Norwegian Airlines, which is a very big airline, they actually, when they were doing their design, they said, we don't want to design, then fail, then design, then fail. We want to actually design, understanding what our fail points are, what our traps are.
And succeed.
Yeah,
it's a whole learning process.
So can you, because for our listeners, we're going to start using task analytics ourselves. So we're going to write a blog about it that will come on marketingguys.nl later on probably this month or next month. But can you share some results? For example, I don't know if you may share them,
sure.
But
sure.
Norwegian or whatsoever, or what company or customer.
We've had customers. I don't want to name some customers because they wouldn't be happy, but that because they have improved obviously now. But we have customers where 70% of their visitors that were looking for the price list couldn't find the bloody price list, right? Now, if it's like an anti-selling machine, right?
Yeah.
It's like, let me help you not buy. So that we've seen extreme examples of, you know, where people are saying we are not getting in subscribers, and they found out that one out of three times the subscription form doesn't work, right?
Yep.
So people are trying to say, call me, I want to buy from you, and it's going into Ethernet. It's getting lost. So a user's intent, why they came to visit your site to accomplish, and what they got out, the outcome, you know, is a huge difference. A user may come to Telia.com, which is a customer of ours, with the intention of upgrading their subscription. And because of whatever reason or broken link or design, you know, the user may not be able to successfully complete this task. With task analytics, you can identify what users are looking for in key areas of your website, find out whether or not they're successful, and then analytics allow you to understand what was the user's intent. Were they successful? If not, why? Did they not understand the pricing? Was the product they wanted out of stock? Was the purchase button broken? These are things that, you know, the moment you find out, you run. You don't do anything else. You fix, first of all, your website, because that's your, you know, window dressing for the rest of the world. That's your number one marketing piece. So to your early questions about Google Analytics and Hotjar, those tools tell you what the user did on the site, which is important, but we help you understand what the user was trying to accomplish. And we actually can take our data and push it into Google Analytics in a bi-directional way. So the Google Analytics dashboard can be enhanced. So whoever looks at Google Analytics dashboard on a daily basis, maybe sometimes many times during the day, you know, we can provide this level of insight. And what we've been told by our customers, large and small, is that once they start seeing this type of information, it's very difficult to work without it, right?
Sure. And would it be, is it the examples you mentioned, like Norwegian, Telia, would you consider Task Analytics to be more a B2C product, or is it also suitable for B2B?
So a lot of our customers are government, departments, even Norwegian data security department, where they actually give us all the regulatory around data and privacy and all these things. They're even more, you see, for them, everything they're doing is information.
Yeah.
So if people don't find the information that they're supposed to provide, right, in the old days, they write books and folders and papers, and they would send it to people's homes, just like the yellow pages and the white pages, right? Phone books.
Yeah.
Right? You don't get phone books anymore, right? You know, there's a lot of things you don't get anymore. We don't even think about it because it's supposed to be available online. But if it's not available online, it means it's hard to find, it's broken, whatever. And people end up calling the department. I imagine the cost, right? Imagine calling somebody in Stockholm or in Oslo, you know, with the cost of living we have there, and try to get help on the phone. I mean, that customer is a loss maker for that year, you know?
Sure.
You lost all the profit on the customer. So we don't have a choice. A lot of these Western countries don't have a choice. We cannot afford to have both a digital and a bricks and mortar type of offering. It's just not economical. So the digital work has to communicate, has to reach, has to be accessible, has to be found. And that's really what we focus on. And we create a journey. And, you know, one of our board members, Jerry McGovern, he is one of the foremost thought leader about customer intimacy, customer care.
Yeah.
And it's something we think that everybody would like, right? Of course. You like your customers? Of course you like your customers. But how do you treat your customers? Do you care whether they are having a good customer experience with you? How do you know if they are? And also, some of our customers found out that whenever somebody was not happy with them or couldn't find what they needed, they wanted to know what exactly they did afterwards. And they found out that actually, who is their real competitor? Because they could see, hey, whenever people don't like what they get from us, they go to this other company every single time, or nine out of ten times. So now they actually say, we thought our competitors was that person, that company over there. But actually, is this rising company here? And now we have to understand this company and make sure that we are competitive with this company. So I think that if I sit down and tell you the type of aha or wow experiences people have when they look at the data, there are also people that look at it and say, oh my goodness, I'm so embarrassed. Let's fix this. Let's not tell anybody very quickly, right?
Ali, this remembers me of what the story that always goes about Jeff Bezos, that when he's having his meeting, he always pulls an empty chair at the meeting and he says, that's where the customer sits.
Yes.
And I get the feeling that Task Analytics can be the voice of that customer, that empty chair in the boardroom, because I've known Jerry McGovern since 2015. I've met him in Dublin, and he's been going on about this for ages, I guess. But the whole story is that with Task Analytics, you really get insight of what the customer really thinks and wants. So getting Task Analytics on board, you're actually giving the customer a voice within your own organization. Is that a correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've always, you know, believed in customer care and customer intimacy. You know, I learned very early on in my career to ask the customer, what do you want? And it's a question that many companies, many executives have a hard time doing because they don't want to be put in a position where they can't do what the customer asked. But ultimately, you have to grow to that. You have to get to the point where you are actually what the customer wanted, right? And continue to want. In order to do that, you have to give them voice. Otherwise, how do you
Right.
know?
Yeah, so I would think that's a nice way to conclude this conversation because, you know, to really do what the customer wants, ask the customer what he or she wants. And that's what Task Analytics do, and that does. And we're going to try it out and write a blog about it. And I would be happy to have you back on the podcast in half a year or so, because I want to share some results from our own experience, etc. Is there anything we missed, Ali, during this short interview? Is there something you'd like to add?
I want to just say that, you know, the passion for understanding your customers. I think if the future of B2B or B2C or government to CEO, whoever, if you don't really take that seriously to understand your customer, why they, what they want, what the experience is, it's going to be very hard to compete and very hard to have an online presence. So there's going to be more and more tools. There's going to be more and more analytics layers. And we want to be the champions of intention. And we look forward to you trying our product, seeing how it works. Give us lots of feedback. But I'll get on the phone back with you, and cool. we'll do a live analysis.
Nice said, Ali. Thank you. We'll put your LinkedIn link to your profile in the show notes. Also, the link to the website Task Analytics will be in the show notes. Thank you. It was my pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for all the insights, Ali. It was very interesting.
Much appreciated. And thank you so much, guys. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Same to you. Bye-bye, Ali.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe to our iTunes channel. Also, if you want to be interviewed on this podcast, or if you have any questions on marketing technology, send me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you.